This is The Poet and the Poem from the Library of Congress. I'm Grace Cavalieri. Jane Clark is here. She's visiting us from Ireland, and she has a new book, and she's going to be talking to us and reading from the book. And to say hello, here's an opening poem, Jane Clark.
When winter comes, remember what the blacksmith knows. Dim light is best at the furnace, to see the colors go from red to orange to yellow. The forging heat that tells the steel is ready to be held in the mouth of the tongs. And it's time to lengthen and narrow with the ring of the hammer on the horn of an anvil, to bend until the forgiving metal has found its form. Then file the burrs, remove sharp edges, smooth the surface, polish with a grinding stone, and see it shine like gold.
The voice of Jane Clark. I'm Grace Cavalieri. We're at the Library of Congress, and she's from Ireland, and we would know it. They say that you are in the greatest tradition of Irish poetry. What do you think that means when they say that?
Well, one of the traditions of Irish poetry is the rural tradition. You know, Patrick Kavanagh, Seamus Heaney. And because I grew up on a farm in the west of Ireland, I found that when I started to write, that's where I got my inspiration. That's where I got the imagery. So that's probably one of the ways.
One of the ways. But another of the ways are the vowels.
Yes.
The vowels, the way the Irish ride the vowels, yes, that make it song.
Yes.
That make it lyric.
Yes.
And you are in that tradition because that, when you read, you actually float on the page. And when I read it on the page, I could hear your voice. So it is really the vowels that do it every time.
I love to hear that.
Jane Clark, we're holding a book, your second book, and it is called When the Tree Falls. What do you think the audience would like to know about this book? How do you describe it?
Well, I wrote it in the 4 years since my first book came out in 2015. And in that time, both my closest friend, Shirley, who was a poet, and my father were ill with cancer, and I accompanied both of them to their deaths. So inevitably, this collection has an elegiac sense.
It does, it does. But there's also a very strong sense of social progress in
yes.
this. You're a great combination of social action and serenity. Not an easy thing to combine, but let's prove it by hearing another poem.
Well, I'm going to read a poem about my mother, which I think encapsulates my mother as a feminist, even though she wouldn't have called herself that, and yet wanting a future for me outside the farm, but yet wanting me to be a housekeeper. And so I think it captures that moment of change. Hers. My mother said she knew, just knew I was going to be a girl. Two boys before me and two boys after, fodder for a hungry farm. But I was hers. She taught me her tricks of the trade. It'll look like dinner is nearly ready if the table is set when he comes in. Bread and butter will fill them up. Add 3 drops of vinegar to water so your mirrors and windows will gleam. Cool your fingers before rubbing lard into flour for pastry. A handful of ground almonds will keep your fruitcake moist. Darn a few socks every night and never leave the ironing for more than a week. Don't cut off rhubarb stalks with a knife. Just twist them clean from the crown. And always hold on to the children's allowance. A woman must have something of her own.
That's a killer last line. It says it all, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a great poem. And you have spoken of women's progress in Ireland. Is that the last frontier? Tell us what's going on in the area where you live. Is there a women's movement? Are there women being published? What is the sense, the lay of the land?
Well, it's a really exciting time for women in Ireland. First of all, even that in 2018, we at last abortion was legalised in Ireland. And that was such a huge move. But even just last week, it's been legalised in Northern Ireland. They have marriage equality, gay and lesbian rights in Northern Ireland. And we got that in 2016. So it's all very recent. A huge shift.
You're going to outdistance us. We're going to be going backward.
That is the concern. That's a huge concern. And that's why these steps forward really matter. Because now the world is so small, we do encourage each other. You know, other countries are excited about what's happened in Ireland because we did represent a conservatism and a religious control.
Extremely.
So it does matter.
So it has been a slow evolution. But do you feel it's in a very strong place?
Yes, I think
women's rights.
I think it's in a very strong place. And I think it comes out of a more compassionate society.
Well said.
And you can feel that. And there were people who maybe had real problems about abortion, but they understood why it is necessary at times for women in hard times in their lives. So I felt that level of understanding is a real shift in Irish society.
I am thrilled to hear it and so happy to have you say it here. At the Library of Congress, I'm Grace Cavalieri. Jane Clark is here. She's making a tour of the USA on the Eastern Coast, and we're going to hear more poetry. Give us two at a time so we can really get your voice.
Okay, so one poem related to what we were just talking about, the morning of that vote which resulted in abortion being legalised in Ireland for the first time. Polling Station, May 25th, 2018. In the queue up to the door of the schoolhouse, neighbours welcome sunshine after the wettest of wet winters. Spirits lifted at the sight of fields drying out, grass thickening, calves thriving, unstoppable growth. There's talk of young ones speeding home to vote, swallows back to the barn. No one asks anyone where they'll place their ex. Every family has stories left like ploughs and harrows among thistles behind the sheds.
Beautiful. And another.
And this poem is dedicated to two women who were involved in 1916 in our rebellion.
Tell us about the Easter Rising.
The Easter Rising. Well, that happened in 1916, where a very small group of people who wanted to form a republic to separate Ireland from our colonial relationship with Great Britain, a very small group had a revolution. And you see, up until now, we didn't know that women were involved. When I was in school, I learned all about Easter 1916, but there was no notion that women were there. These two women were nurses in the GPO in the midst of that very dangerous time. But then I also learned that they were life partners. And you see, what was interesting is that after the revolution, Ireland became very conservative again. When Ireland became a republic, then the church came in and got control again. So I wondered about these two women, and that's where the poem came.
And you're
came.
Bringing them to life.
In Glasnevin, for Elizabeth O'Farrell and Julia Grennan. Finding the words carved on their plain granite headstone, faithful comrade, lifelong friend, reminds me of my grandmother who used to say, there was none of that in my day. I wish I could ask the faithful Julia and Elizabeth, were they grateful for the mercy of sharing a grave? Did they choose those words to save them from shame? Did they have someone to tell that though the words said so much, they didn't say enough? And when they nursed the rebellion's wounded, did they question the cost of a new free state?
And that won an award.
Yes, it did. And it was chosen by public vote, which is interesting.
That is fabulous.
That says a lot as well.
It does.
Yes.
And is it the only poem about these two women, I wonder, that exists?
I think there might be other poems about them. I'm not sure. There are now more poems about the women who were involved in the Rising,
definitely. It takes
definitely.
A while.
Yes.
It takes a while.
Yes.
Jane Clark grew up in a farm in Roscommon.
That's right. Yes.
And she now lives in Glenmalure.
Glenmalure.
Okay, my Italian accent is not good.
It's fine.
In Wicklow.
Yes.
And she combines writing with work as a creative writing teacher and a group facilitator and helping with small organizations that are working for social change. BA in English and philosophy from Trinity College. That's in Dublin. And a master's in philosophy. There's not, it's called, not a master's, is it?
It's called
something else.
It's an MPhil. So
in philosophy.
It was a master's in creative writing, but it's called an MPhil. That's, it's a master's in philosophy, but
I've heard
it's actually
that.
Creative
and that's
writing.
And that's only in UK and Ireland. I've never heard that before.
Yes.
And you also got that from the University of South Wales.
Yes.
And also a background in psychoanalysis and psychotherapy. Well, I didn't actually see that directly in your poems, but how do you think it informs your poems?
Well, I started to train as a psychotherapist when I was 32. And it's such a long training, as you know, psychoanalysis. So I was involved in psychoanalysis for, 10 years very intensely. And I think, because I only started to write in my early 40s. So I think that my own experience of psychoanalysis freed up my creativity. I have no doubt about it.
Amen, sister. And I'm all for that.
And it's something about the grieving, the letting go, the lifting up of ways of being that allows something more fundamental to emerge, more true to myself, I think, that emerged. So, but it was in a way, it's kind of ironic that then when it came to my early 40s, I started to write, fell in love with poetry, and then I had to leave psychotherapy because I found they're both vocations, being a psychotherapist, being a poet, and
I'm
I couldn't
glad
do both.
You see it that way.
Yeah.
I'm glad you see it as a very serious vocation.
Yeah.
Because although it isn't one that earns a lot of a reward materially, it is something that we practice every day, and it is a profession certainly as significant as the law or medicine, and it does as much good.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And it can bring about change, and it's the way it reaches people through the heart and through their ears, through the music of the poetry.
When I say poetry can save the world, I mean if everyone were vulnerable, they would be strong.
That's right.
And we wouldn't have to lie.
Yes.
Because we wouldn't be afraid. So there's a lot of things. I work with teens and try to have a lot of that work. If they only know that everything they have is within them, it's a good beginning.
It is a great beginning.
Jane Clark is at the Library of Congress. I'm Grace Cavalieri, and we're going to hear another poem.
So this poem is from the 2 months when we nursed my father at home before he died. I've got you. Through days of morphine and titbits to tempt his appetite, there's nowhere else to be. I hold his teacup to his lips, wash his face and the hands I rarely touched. During the night, old hurts and worries surface like stones in a well-tilled field. What time is it now? He asks on the hour. He sings to himself and murmurs lines he learned as a child. All we like sheep have gone astray. Mm. We have turned every one to his own way. When he asks to get up, I hold his wrists, brace his weight, my weight against his. For a moment, he's confused. It's okay, Janie. I've got you. Go on now. You can stand.
Jane Clark. Her first collection was The River, and that was Blood Axe Books as well. And that was on the Royal Society of Literature's prize. And you have won the Hennessy Literary Award and the inaugural Listowel Writers Week Poem of the Year Award at the Irish Book Awards. So you are known throughout the country now.
Yes.
Would you say?
Yes, I'd say fairly well known, yes.
And you were born on a farm.
Yes.
Describe that farm to us.
Well,
what did it look like and what was it like? What did you do there with four brothers?
Well, it's in the Midlands of Ireland, which is quite flat land, but lots of lakes and rivers and good limestone land. So the farm I grew up on was both cattle and sheep. And I grew up in a very old farmhouse. The farmhouse is probably about 300 years old, and it's been in the family, my father's family, all of those generations. So there was a real sense of tradition and a real sense of farming being what really mattered. And so, you know, leaving there at 17 was a wrench, but I needed to go and find a different life. And that's part of what I explored in my first collection. But then writing poetry brought me back, but brought me back from a different place and put me in touch with my deep love for that land, for those hedges, for the ditches, and for the people of that place and that way of life.
Yes, do you go visit that place?
Yes.
Do they know you're a poet?
Oh, yes, they do. Yeah, Roscommon has been very warmly welcoming to me.
There's going to be a Jane Clark Lane, do you think?
I don't know about that, but they're very, you know.
Did you have chores?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. I mean, my brothers would tease me and say, you spend most of your time reading, you know, because I escaped some of the chores because I was into school and everything. But yes, oh, no, we'd be out feeding calves in the evening, putting in the hens, you know, hunting sheep, herding with my father. I'm working in the garden.
It's a beautiful thing.
Yeah,
to be in touch with the earth.
Yes.
And the earth is in your poetry. The land is there, the sights, the smells, the tastes, and that is what's made you so distinctive. And we are here with the Library of Congress with Jane Clark, going to hear more.
So I'm going to read one poem from my first collection, because I think it fits with what we're talking about. It's the title poem, The River. What surprises me now is not that you're gone, but how I go on without you. As if I'd lost no more than a finger, my hand still strong, perhaps stronger, can do what it must, like carving your name on a branch from the beach by the suck, letting the river take you so I can call myself free. Only sometimes, like yesterday, or the day before, last night, or this morning, the river flows backwards, uphill to my door.
What was the river's name?
It's the Suck, S-U-C-K. It's a tributary of the Shannon, which is that mighty river, the biggest river in the two islands of the UK and Ireland. But the Suck is a little tributary.
Where do you live now in relation to where you were born?
The other side of the country. And interestingly, I live amongst the mountains.
Oh.
You know, so I went from the Midland, the flat of the Midland, to the mountains. And I love the mountains, I have to say.
Well, you're giving us a good... You certainly should work for the tourist agency because I want to go. I want to go and see all this that you're talking about. So, Jane, you come from the earth. There's dirt in your poetry. But you've distilled it so that it's so universal. We feel that every hedgerow we've seen is the same hedgerow you've seen. How do you think that happens?
Well, I mean, it's lovely to hear that. I think that's what's really important about poetry. I think there's something about if you can make it as true as possible for yourself, then it becomes true for others. So it is, I do cut back. I like the bareness of a poem.
Yes, you are very modest. I have to say that what struck me most about your poetry and the reason you're sitting here is because there's no grandstanding. It's that you trust the reader. It is so modest and simple. You say, this is my truth. This is what it looks like. it isn't as if you have to do a bunch of bells and whistles to get our attention. You really trust the reader, don't you?
And it's funny, I said that when I was speaking about my work yesterday morning. I said, trust the reader. And I was saying that in that, you know, not to put embellishment, not to try and tie a little bow at the end. Leave space for the reader to bring their life to it and their associations.
That is the one thing I was going to ask you that you wanted to teach, and you've just told me. So if you are working with a group of creative writers, would that be the most significant thing, or what would you want them to know most?
One of the things is to go for the truth of the poem. That the poem has a life of its own that is separate from our life. To let our emotional currents, that a poem doesn't have to be autobiographic, but it comes out of the truth of your emotional experience. And so that means that you can bring in other ideas or other concrete details and let the poem find its truth. It's kind of hard to explain.
It's the center. Yeah. It's the source that you're talking about. Yes, not to start from the inside out.
Yes.
And so let's prove that with another poem. We're at the Library of Congress.
So this poem was written after my father died, and it comes from a story he used to tell about the first time he minded me when my mother went off to see her mother, and he couldn't get me to stop crying. And so in my mourning after he died, I wrote this poem, Lullaby. Try as he might, he couldn't hush the baby's crying. He carried her out to the yard, showed her pullets pecking at scraps, ewes snuffling oats, calves tucked up in straw, but she would not be consoled. He sat with her on a sack of barley in the barn, lifted a handful that smelled of molasses, and began to speak of reaping, threshing, winnowing grain, dust and chaff clinging to sweat as they bent to stook sheaves. He hummed the thrasher's thrumming, and by the time he got to the twisters that sent wisps of straw circling like spirits above their heads, she slept.
Hums the thrasher's thrumming?
Yes.
Okay, now. Okay. That's Irish.
Yes.
That's Irish.
Yes.
I like that very much. Let's have another.
So this is a story my mother used to tell. And one thing to just say, a jumper in Ireland means a sweater. So this is a true story that she used to tell, and she told it at the kitchen table and reminded my father and I of it. The yellow jumper. They weren't married long when she saw it. A turtleneck jumper in Murray's window. Yellow as happiness, as the flash on a goldfinch's wings. She imagined him wearing it at the fairs, standing out from all the rest in their greens and greys. 18 shillings and sixpence, she paid for it on tick, threepence a week. For all that he smiled on his birthday, it remained on the back of the bedroom chair. One day she folded and packed it in the chest, with the spare candles, letters, photographs, and the other questions she didn't ask. She likes to think of him there, among pens of breeding heifers, weanlings and hoggets, splendid in yellow.
Give me that last line again, I can't get enough of it.
Still, I like to think of him there, among pens of breeding heifers, weanlings and hoggets, splendid in yellow.
Does everyone know who you are? Are you getting enough notice in Ireland?
Well,
Blood Axe does a good job.
Yeah, Blood Axe are wonderful.
You.
Yes.
Are there venues?
There are venues. I do a lot of readings. Mm-hmm. And because I brought out two books actually this year, I brought out this book of poems about the First World War as well. And that was commissioned by a library in London. So I did a lot of readings from it as well. So I'd say I'm quite well
known. You're busy.
Yes,
and
I am.
You're a practicing poet every day.
Every day.
You work every day?
Every
day.
What
time of day?
Morning. Morning is my time. I get mm-hmm. up as early as I can. I do yoga mm-hmm. first thing in the morning. That's my 20 minutes. And then I work. And I carve out time for poetry. I just want that time, you know, because I earn a living as a facilitator and I work with organisations. So and I'm doing readings. And so it's very busy. But that's the precious time first thing in the morning.
I agree. We're very close to our nighttime mind then,
yes.
which is much underrated in the
yes.
world because there's a lot going on there
yes.
and a lot of codes we can decipher for our poetry. Mm. However, I don't see any surreality in your work. You're very much grounded in reality, and that's the way you like it. We don't get any weird stuff.
No
weird stuff with Jane. No. Well, we are coming to the end of our show. So let's have a final poem.
Kelly's Garden. And this is the last poem in the collection. And it was written in the about a year and a half after my father died, when I again had a sense of him being around. Kelly's Garden. You can find him in the names of the fields. Kelly's Garden, Bacanoctons, Malbrannans, the sandhole, the quarry, the rocks.
Mm.
He's stacking square bales, chanting knots in and down, so rain won't lodge in their hearts. March, and he's cursing merciless wind, cattle running amok. He's laughing at McAleer's joke about the father who welcomes his eldest home from Alberta or Azerbaijan, with the only question that matters, were there many on the bus? You can hear him in the jackdaws, chuck, chuck, up high on galvanized roofs, and in his whistling that rises and falls like the curlew calling from Emla Bog.
Beautiful, the voice of Ireland's Jane Clark. This is The Poet and the Poem. The program is brought to you by Forest Woods Media Productions. Post-production by Mike Turpin, MET Studios. We wish to thank the Library of Congress for making this program possible. Funding is provided by the Reva and David Logan Foundation and the Sinipit Fund. Our engineer is Mike Turpin. I'm Grace Cavalieri.